Some of you are here today that weren't here yesterday. How many are in that category? Here today, not here yesterday. Welcome. Fifth annual Chopper Retreat. Just to set the mood and focus, I want to share a little bit of just reflecting on what we're doing. I'll start and hopefully I'll remember to end reminding you all Mona Vrata. If anyone doesn't know what that means, raise your hand and let us observe Mona Vrata for the balance of the day until we end our 64 rounds in the evening. If you have to sleep with your children, do it softly and that kind of thing. Otherwise, Mona Vrata, please. I was thinking about the timing. It's really special. We planned the Rathyatra in New York the second weekend, second Saturday in June, specifically because school ends at the end of the second week of June in New York. Here is the third week. So it's the end of the school year, the beginning of the summer, and first thing is Krishna! Big, strong Krishna! For everybody, all of our congregation members of the public, and put Krishna on people's mind for the rest of the summer. So here, school goes a week longer. Sorry about that. And then school ends, and first thing is Krishna! Only instead of Rathyatra, it's a Japa retreat. Then you put, you know, part of us keep you all busy doing so many things that are festival related all year long, especially in the summer. But it has a very nice purpose that our children and youth that go to school don't have school, so they can put a big Krishna in their summer through increasing japa. Just naturally and practically makes that arrangement. And for all the rest of you now that your children are not going to school, big Krishna goes into your summer. It's just the timing is really nice. And another, this is June 21st, and according to the solar calendar, this is summer solstice, yes? When it's the other end around, this Makar Sankranti, and those of you from India, you know, that's like a big deal. It's a big festival, especially if you're in Maharashtra. It's like, ooh, big festival, Sankranti. This is the other way. It's an auspicious day. The longest day of the year, sunlight-wise. So it's an auspicious day to do what we're doing. Doing, engaging in increased hearing and chanting, especially today, it makes it very, very nice. Then another thought is, on the theme of these mind-tended contemplation, theme of this retreat is permanently enhancing our relationship with the Holy Name. If you remember from yesterday, those of you who remember yesterday, that's at least my intended message or contemplation, meditation. So this is, today is an eternal investment event. So whatever you do today, it'll be with you forever, eternally. Not just this lifetime or the next lifetime, eternally, whatever you do today, eternal investment event, very auspicious. And what to speak of short-term investment, like how it may enrich your experience and stay with you tomorrow and this coming week and this summer and, you know, the rest of your devotional life in this lifetime. So the opposite is try not to get distracted. Stay focused, because there's lots to be distracted by, without naming the various distractions, the thing that you left behind and you're thinking about, and whatever it is. The boats that are sailing in the sea. And I remember from Japa Retreat, I attended. It was in California. It was really up on a beautiful place, a Buddhist retreat center up high in the mountain. To get there around and around and around and around, it kind of felt like going to Tirupati or something. And then from the vista where we were standing, you can see the deep smoke, and then off in the distance there's the bay and the ocean. It's like, wow, you know, you get really lost in the view. I don't know if anyone else noticed that the deer this morning checking us out, and we were checking them out, and, you know, you just get distracted in the whole thing. So there was this eagle or hawk, one or the other, that was circling around, just like flying with his wings open, just as the breeze was going. He was doing one of those around and around. It was mesmerizing. And I was watching the eagle instead of paying attention to the holy name. And then, because I knew it was going to happen, I was just waiting for it to happen. Suddenly, his wings folded tight against his body, and he saw. He was what he was after was not like having a nice dance in the air. He was after a little creature on the ground. And he moved really fast and then flew up in the air with this creature wiggling his legs, and that was his meal for the day. And I was thinking, death may come at any moment, and you're la la la, enjoying the scene and the sights and life, and then death comes. Second, we know it's going to come. I knew it was going to come, and as you know, distracted by, Rabindra Snoop calls, distracted by distractions of distraction. You try to deal with the distractions, and then below that is another layer of distraction, and another layer of distraction, thinking, oh, finally I've gotten free from distractions, and then you're stuck in pride, thinking about how you're being successful, the enjoyer of your spiritual success, and it's just so layer after layer. So appreciate the opportunity that's been provided. We've come a long distance, some of us very far distance, to participate in this. Shorter distance, longer distance, here we are. It's a great opportunity to permanently enhance your relationship with the Holy Name. With a clear sense of intention, combine that with your effort to chant nicely. Guaranteed. Those two things, guaranteed something's going to happen. It may not be what you expect, it may not be what you want, but something's going to happen. Krishna will shift things, and behind that shift, you'll see Krishna's hand, if not Krishna, helping you permanently enhance your relationship with Him through your relationship with the Holy Name. May you have such a day. Okay, well, the topic for this morning is the topic that didn't get covered yesterday evening because of the adjustment of our schedule. The title is Nama, the Holy Name, destroys the contamination caused by Kali. That's our topic. And I was thinking, whoever's idea it was to bring Srimad Bhagavatam, I'm very grateful to them for thinking of that. Because it completely fits in with our topics yesterday and what we're here for. Yesterday, the two topics that we covered, accessing the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, on our altar is Gornita. And Lord Nityananda is the chief assistant of Lord Chaitanya in distributing the mercy. He's the most merciful of the most merciful, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Lord Nityananda. And they appeared in this world to give a gift. What is that prayer that we recite when we glorify Lord Chaitanya? Momahavaranaya. Krishna Prema Pradayate. They come to give Krishna Prema. You left something behind you. They came to give Krishna Prema, but very special Krishna Prema. The love for Krishna as found in Vrindavan. Because one can only enter that love of Vrindavan through the associates of Vrindavan, otherwise not accessible. And that's the gift of Lord Chaitanya King. And how did he give us access to that? To the chanting of the holy name. And we were speaking yesterday about getting access to the holy name. Not just making sound, but getting access to the holy name. And these Shikshasakam three, these four things mentioned here, humility, tolerance, and the unending, unceasing mood of service. And then we spoke of two other things from the Gurudev Kripa Bindudiya song. These wonderful qualities of seeing, wishing to enter into relationships with all the other living beings where we're offering them proper respect. And also where there's not any expectation of respect for ourselves. And then the other is this Srimad Bhagavatam, because the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, he didn't just pull it out of the air. Hey, I've got some nice teachings. Here you go. It's based upon Srimad Bhagavatam. And specifically, we're going to be discussing primarily the first three chapters of Canto 12. In that section, there is a famous verse. We're going to end up with the famous verse from Srimad Bhagavatam that says, in this age of Kali, the primary means of achieving spiritual perfection, Yuga Dharma, is the chanting of the holy name. His teachings were based on the writings of Srimad Bhagavatam. So by these two, Srimad Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, it's a perfect combination. It's exactly what Srila Prabhupada gave us. He gave us the chanting of the holy name. That's how we start the Hare Krishna movement. That's why it's called the Hare Krishna movement. Just chanting of the holy name. When I was a college student, the first time I met Prabhupada, he was chanting Hare Krishna at the university where I was attending. And meanwhile, his whole life as an acharya was translating Srimad Bhagavatam for us. These two, the holy name and Srimad Bhagavatam. And here we have them. In the section that we're going to read from the 12th canto, the question is raised and then it's answered. How are the pernicious effects of the age of Kali counteracted? And Shukadeva Goswami says it's the holy name. So, why this topic today? And how is this going to benefit you today, your 64-round day? It's a nice philosophy. How is it going to benefit you today? The application part. There's a very obvious statement that I'll make, that this is the reason why. Attention goes to that which we value. Like Sanatana Goswami in the Touchstone, most of you know that story. He kept the most valuable thing, which is the name. He kept the touchstone in the rubbish heap. Because he didn't value the gold that the touchstone had produced as much as he valued the holy name. And when the Brahmana wished to have that gift of the touchstone, Sanatana Goswami was sure. Take it, it's yours. Charity to a Brahmana. And it worked. When he saw the Brahmana saw it work, he came back to Sanatana Goswami and said, wait a minute, there must be something more valuable than this, because otherwise you have to keep it the Brahmana sheet. Yeah. It was much more valuable. Can I have that much more valuable, whatever it is? Sure. On one condition. What's that? Throw the touchstone in the river. And he gave him the more valuable thing. That which we value is where our attention goes. So why is it difficult to be attentive when chanting? Because we don't value the holy name so much. We value stuff. And, you know, our attachments and all that. That's where our attention goes. And if we value the holy name, so this is the application is in the course of the day, if you find yourself in a kind of drifty condition, besides, you know, come back to where the devotees are chanting together and sit next to somebody that's absorbed and chant in the association of devotees, because it makes it really easy. But you can also remember this gift, this most valuable thing. That the limitations that we have are like our attraction for the temporary. You know that one? Asat Krishna in Sanskrit. Thirst for the impermanent. That which is part of our psyche because, you know, we grew up in Kali Yuga and we're innocent. You're innocent. I just was a victim of that association. Not my fault. Well, we have an antidote, and that's that which is more valuable. So if you can recall this, that which we're plagued by, there's a means to overcome it, and that's the holy name. It can be impetus to chant the holy name, because our attention is that of inattention or distraction. Our attention goes to that which we value. That's the application point. A little bit of spinning out on, you know, what people can easily whine and complain about. I'll just give a for example. Again, I was just in New York. And while there's a couple of devotees who are completing their college education and they have an internship in New York City. And one of them happened to have an internship at Wall Street. And, you know, it was yikes. You know, Maharaj, what do I do? It's so passionate and contaminating and help. You know, maybe I get the wrong internship. Passion, without elaborating and giving graphic examples, ignorance is so abundant and becoming more and more, that grows in your face abundant. Again, I was in New York, and I haven't been through Times Square in, I don't know, 15 years. I just drove through Times Square, and I was shocked. Coming from a dental appointment, coming back to the temple. And we just somehow drove down 7th Avenue through Times Square. And you know, the signs and how people were dressed. I mean, I won't even tell you it was so gross. What to speak of seeing, what to speak of, it happens every day. Like, mega gross. I mean, wow. Or where I'm staying. And one of the pictures on the wall is, here's a photograph of the mode of ignorance, and here's a photograph of the mode of passion. You know, liquor and cigars and cigarettes and, you know, boar's head and, you know, oh my God, you know, this is how people celebrate life, mode of ignorance. I mean, and you know better than I know. You mix with all of this more than I mix with all of this. Passion and ignorance. How are you protected from the onslaught of this age of Kali? What to do? Srimad Bhagavatam tells us these two things. Now, it counteracts the effects of Kali and Krishna Katha. Srimad Bhagavatam and the holy name. That's what the Bhagavatam is telling us. We have shelter, if we take shelter. Now we need not just to call the holy name, but we need to take shelter of the holy name. That was what we discussed yesterday. So the details of the age of Kali, the, you know, coming attractions of how Kali progresses, is detailed in Canto 12. So to get to Canto 12, let's do a little overview of Srimad Bhagavatam. We know that Srimad Bhagavatam has, just like Bhagavad Gita, two main personalities, Krishna and Arjuna. Krishna speaking, Arjuna hearing and asking questions of Krishna. Same question answer format for Srimad Bhagavatam. Speaker, Shukadeva Goswami, and the receiver of the messages, Maharaja. Not Srimad Bhagavatam. But it, curiously, Shukadeva Goswami doesn't appear until the end, the very last 19th chapter of the first canto. Vyasadeva is the author, and he begins speaking after there's several chapters introducing the child that's over there whining, can find another place to make that nice sound vibration, please. Then comes the real loud one next. Good. Krishna is very kind. He made that sound vibration just for sannyasis. Krishna is very kind. In the this last chapter of Canto 1, Marge Pictet, although we hear from the previous chapters how elevated he is, even before he did anything, even before he was born, he was recipient of Krishna's mercy, very, very special mercy. He was, you could say, a chosen soul or a favored soul, pure devotee. And the course of his life was also similarly glorious. And then this great calamity happened, as will happen to all of us. There is no exception in this world. So if you have some misfortune come your way, you know, welcome. Because it's just part of this world. Even Maharaj Pictet, or you name it. There's fortune and ill fortune in this world. So his ill fortune was he was cursed to die in 7 days by the son of the Brahmana. But there was also good fortune, because it meant the appearance of Srimad Bhagavatam in this world. And it also, the good fortune was, Krishna wanted Maharaj Pictet to be with him. So he was swiftly making the arrangement for Maharaj Pictet to be with him. So double good fortune within that misfortune. Maharaj Pictet accepted the curse without flinching. Actually, he knew, after he had done this outrageous thing to the sage, speaking harshly, although he was in meditation, draping a dead snake over his shoulder like a garland. That's not Maharaj Pictet. See, he felt immediately, as soon as he had done that, very bad. We all know what that feeling is. You may say something harsh or do something stupid, and why did I do that? That was really bad. So he had one of those feelings. And as his way back to the palace, he understood, I'm going to get a reaction. And his mind was already resolved, I'm going to just accept it, whatever it is. Krishna will give some reaction for this wrongdoing. I will accept it. So when the reaction was told to him, he would die in 7 days. Immediately he accepted it, gave up his kingdom, gave up his crown, his royal attire, took on the attire of a mendicant, went and sat by the sacred river, and declared his sankalpa. I'm going to fast until death. No water, no food, near Jalakadasi for 7 days. And all the sages came to be present for the glorious event. He then presented two questions. The two questions were, what is that subject matter that one should hear, chant, and always remember to prepare oneself for death, which could happen at any time, like hawks swooping down and capturing a little field mouse? Or how we may also depart this world, however that may happen. And the other is, what is one's duty? He asked these two questions. The Bhagavatam says that the sages, they started to discuss, and they all disagreed. But then, but Shukadeva Goswami came, and he was very clear. And he explained, starting with Canto 2. But then he also asked for, from the sages that had come, three benedictions, very significant. This is because it connects with yesterday's discussion. He requested blessings from them for rati, towards the personality of Godhead, love and ecstatic devotion. Always toward the personality of Godhead. That's enough, right? He also asked for the association of devotees in whose company he could hear and discuss topics about Krishna together. So that's enough, right? He asked for one more. He asked for a friendly disposition towards all living beings. If you recall from yesterday, these sakale samaya, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur was praying for, proper regard for all living entities. It's very similar. Friendly relation with all living beings. Friendly regard towards all. A good disposition towards everyone. And with everyone includes, there are some that treat you nicely and some that don't treat you nicely. Some that, you know, if there's duality in this world, sometimes there's honor and sometimes there's dishonor. Some people speak very nicely, some people speak harshly. Just the nature of the place. There is duality here. So having a friendly regard towards everyone, all living entities. And that way, manadena, just as in Shikshastakam. Respect for everyone. Honor and respect to everyone. Willingness and eagerness to offer respect to everyone, even people that are, you know, otherwise unfriendly and harsh and cruel and bad and mean and so on. That's a very high position. But that was what Maharaj Pariksit was requesting. Why? So his heart, two things. His heart couldn't be infested with, you know, stuff that was in that box yesterday. You know, the things that we hold ill feelings towards someone or some hurt from that someone, just gone. Because your attention goes there. How can you pay attention to the holy name? That's what's important rather than this most valuable thing of the holy name. They did this, they said that, and you know, the chatter of the mind. You don't have access to the pure holy name in that condition. Rather, instead, the other part is your heart is free. Your heart, and you're liberated. You're free from that bondage of implication and material duality. So, these two wonderful questions by Maharaj Pariksit. Shukadeva Goswami begins responding. The first three chapters of Canto 2, he responds. So, Srimad Bhagavatam could be over after three chapters in Canto 2. But things that he says then inspire Maharaj Pariksit to ask further questions from what he says. And so, Canto 2 goes on, and Canto 3. 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, just replete with wonderful descriptions of topics in relation to Krishna and Krishna's devotees, and very wonderful teachings that help us to free our heart from the contaminations of material existence and attraction for Krishna. Rati, this is Maharaj Pariksit requested. And then in Canto 9, the subject matter is the lineage of kings from the Surya dynasty and the Moon dynasty. And in the Moon dynasty comes Krishna. So, Maharaj Pariksit is really eager to hear about Krishna. And Shukadeva Goswami is very eager to talk about Krishna. So the longest canto in the whole Srimad Bhagavatam follows. He's like the lineage of kings, forget it, just talking about Krishna. And when Krishna's pastimes are concluded, the end of Canto 10 comes Canto 11. In Canto 11, Narada visits Dwarka to meet with Vasudeva. And Vasudeva says to Narada, I was so eager for so many things, I forgot to ask for the blessings of being in the eternal association of the Supreme Lord. So can you please discuss those topics with me? The artist says, very nice question. And to describe this question, let me narrate something that happened long, long ago. The same discussion took place. This is specific succession. Where the Namyogendras, 9 of the 100 sons of King Rishabdev, met with King Nimi. And nice discussion, so many topics. Like if you had a scale of the weight and heaviness of topics, those first 5 chapters of Canto 11 are heavy. The scale will go way down. Very rich, thorough discussion. High philosophical discussion. And then comes Krishna again. The major part of Canto 11 is Krishna speaking to Uddhava, because Krishna hasn't departed yet, but he's very soon going to depart. And his dear devotee, Uddhava, which was discussed way back in the first part of Canto 3, Uddhava's in big anxiety because he knows that Krishna is going to leave, and he's searching high and low and everywhere because Krishna had left Dwarka. And he surprisingly, amazingly finds Krishna in a forest in Vrindavan, reclining very gracefully against a young banyan tree with his arms stretched down to his knees and his beautiful lotus eyes and his yellow dhoti, smiling very serenely. He hasn't left. Buddha was elated and he runs and falls before Krishna. He pleads with Krishna, please don't go, but if you go, please take me with you. And he asks many, many, many questions, just like Arjuna. Long section, chapter 6 to chapter 29. Buddha Gita. And then the last 2 chapters is Krishna's departure. Another incredible Leela. Canto 11 is over. Krishna's gone. Bhagavatam is over. But it's not over. There's another canto. Shukadeva Goswami is asked by Maharaj Pariksit, back in Canto 9, you're describing lineages of kings, but you didn't finish because you got too excited talking about Krishna. Can you complete that description of lineages of kings? Something like that. So, the first chapter, I'm going to summarize the first 3 chapters of Canto 12. All of that was just background to get to our topic. Chapter 1 of Canto 12 is titled The Degraded Dynasties of Kali Yuga, because before it was exalted and then degraded. Krishna's gone. Kali Yuga has begun. So the dynasties of the sun and the moon dynasty in Canto 9. Krishna in Cantos 10 and 11. Exclusively in Canto 10, predominantly in Canto 11. And Krishna's departure. So Canto 12 begins where Canto 9 ends. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes that when Krishna was present, the personality of Kali had already advented, but he couldn't do anything, because in Krishna's presence, Kali has no sphere to act. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Tafford describes, there was a dialogue. Personality probably went and complained to Krishna. I can't do anything. While you're present, so Krishna replies, don't worry, very soon I'm going to depart. Then Kali says, but when you depart, your devotees will still be here. And when your devotees are here, there is going to be observance of the regular principles of Dharma. And I won't have any influence. And Krishna replies, don't worry, I'm going to remove my devotees too. Then you'll have plenty of opportunity to do your nefarious thing. So Krishna removed the members of the Yadu dynasty that's earlier discussed in the Bhagavatam. For two reasons, so that because of his plan, it's Krishna's plan. The age of Kali is the age of Kali. It's one of the things that stopped Maharaj Pariksit. I can't interfere with Krishna's plan. He could have killed Pushmani Kali, finished. But Krishna had his plan, so he didn't interfere with Krishna's plan. And Krishna didn't interfere with Krishna's plan either. Because it's the age of Kali. But you know, so question. Why? Why would Krishna have such a horrible age? Krishna's Kali. You know, the classic question, one of the five classic questions. God is all good. God is all powerful. So why does he allow bad things to happen? You know that one? There's different ways of asking the same question. So why did Krishna allow the personality of Kali? The age of Kali, why? People so many bad things, people suffer, and so on. Why is it part of his plan? We'll hear the answer to that question. Stay tuned. Then he goes on, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, not only that, not only I take my devotees and the Yadu dynasty and Maharaj Pariksit, because Maharaj Pariksit was checking the personality of Kali. He took Maharaj Pariksit, so Kali can do his thing. But Krishna said to the personality of Kali, I have a special arrangement for you. I'm going to request my dear devotee, Lord Shiva, to appear in this age and teach there is no God, impersonal philosophy. And then people can think, oh, not only there's no God, but I'm God. And then you'll really have a nice time. So going back, this chapter is the degradation, the degraded dynasties of kings in Kali Yuga. But before the degradation of kings comes the degradation of the Brahmana order. And it starts with Srinivas. It's in the purports of that chapter, where Srinivas curses, Prabhupada comments in his commentary, as do our acharyas. This marked the beginning of Kali Yuga, where those who are Brahmanas, at least by birth, and to some degree by having the skills, Srinivas knew how to use Brahminical mantras to curse, but he didn't know how to properly utilize them. When you have something very powerful in the hand of a fool, very dangerous. Like technology in the hands of a fool. Very dangerous. Yes, very dangerous. Just anecdotal. Some years ago, I was invited to speak in a graduate anthropology class at the University of Connecticut, in Storrs, Connecticut. I was one of three speakers. And the theme for that particular anthropology class, graduate levels, was things that have influenced the quality of life in America today more than anything. So the first person that was asked to speak was the chairman of the computer science department. So he got up to speak. And he pointed out the window. That's how he started. See that building over there? When we started our computer science department, the computer took up that entire building. They didn't have, you know, microtechnology. It was like this giant thing. And, you know, then we learned, you know, through development of the technology of computers, how to make more small ones. So we had, you know, many computers in the building. I'll make it short. I'll try. He said, so, of course, like everything in graduate level of studies, we were depending upon funding from the commercial world so we could do the research and we can develop things. So one of the first contracts that we got for our graduate students to develop was a technology from France. They wanted a technology where people could get information on phone numbers and all of that without having to talk to an operator. That's how it used to be. For those of you that are younger, you don't know that one. So they developed a technology, people could get telephone information automatically. Very nice, really. The next contract, from France, because they heard about that one. Maybe people can do banking without having to go to bank. So they developed a technology for doing banking. University of Connecticut. And then the next thing was, well, it's kind of impersonal just through the bank. We'd like to see the teller. And I'm the customer. They developed that technology to see the teller. Then the next opportunity was a prostitution group. So you could show the girls, and then you can get customers by showing the girls. So that same technology. And he said, you know, we then had this realization that without morality, without ethics and values in life, something that's very powerful in the hands of a foolish person can be very dangerous. So I think that's why you invited these other people to come, because I was the next speaker. Well, what an introduction, huh? No, persons that can teach the value and the importance of life, and then you can put something valuable in that person's hand, powerful in that person's hand, and they can use it properly, not improperly. But because without ethics and values, something powerful in the hands of a fool is very dangerous. Yes? There's a whole story like that from Mahabharata. When Salva was saved from the fire in the forest, with at least one version of Mahabharata says, he wanted to do something in gratitude for Arjuna. So he volunteered, I'll teach you all of my tricks, all this technology. Arjuna looked to Krishna. Krishna said, no, that'll spoil everything. So instead, Krishna indicated, you can build this place for us in the forest. Was it Shalva? What was the person who built the Dharma Assembly Hall, Sudharma Assembly Hall? Mayadharma. So technology, even in the hands of Arjuna, Krishna said no. But to speak of fools. So that's what Shrini, he had the technology of how to utter curse. They didn't know how to properly utilize it. He didn't have the character to know how to properly utilize it. That's how things get destroyed. Brahminical power in the hands of one without brahminical quality. And so that marked, according to the Bhagavatam, the beginning of the degradation of Kali, the influence of the personality of Kali through the Brahmana class. Now, going over to chapter 1 of Canto 12 is the degradation of the Kshatriya order. And there's details and details in that chapter 1 of the lineage of kings and how they became corrupted. And then fast forward into, you know, modern times. I don't know if you know this, but Sataputta and Ravindra Prabhu both, one being a scientist, the other being a philosopher, both in detail studied the history of Eastern Europe, or Europe, because this is where the popes became degraded, the kings became degraded, and the result of that was abolition of monarchy, which was Krishna's system, and bringing in democracy. Vox populi, you know, to decide what's right and wrong. So that little gap, you know, the degradation of the Brahminical and the degradation of the Kshatriya, how it played out. It's described in the first chapter of Canto 12, but it's fast forward in time. You know, Parashuram killing the degraded kings 21 times all over the place to preserve Vedic culture. But still, they, you know, they went here and there and did their thing. And then further degradation, further. It's just Kali Yuga progresses to modern times. And it's moving really fast. Then chapter 2, which I'm not going to discuss very much, but if you, it's the title of the chapter, Symptoms of the Age of Kali. If you want a yikes experience, like get you really serious about devotional service, you can read the last chapter of Canto 5, Description of the Hellish Planets. I've had devotees tell me, whoa, I read that chapter and I get really serious about my devotional service. And chapter 2 of Canto 12, all the descriptions. You know, 'cause it's only mentioned in the first canto, just in this one verse. Prayina payushakshabhya kalabasvin yugejana manda samanda matayo manda bhagya upadrita. Manda means bad. This is bad and that's bad and the other thing is bad. The details are found in chapter 2 as Kali Yuga progresses. Hold on to your socks when you read that chapter. Hold on to your beanbag at the other hand because it's scary. And if not like dreamland, it's going to unfold in the course of time. All that awful, awful detail. And then chapter 3. So please appreciate what Shukadeva Goswami and Vyasadeva are doing. They're giving us a clear picture of the age of Kali. The degradation of kings and the lineage following Krishna's departure. The symptoms of the age of Kali as it reaches towards the end of the age of Kali. And here we are somewhere in between. That lineage of kings that became degraded and the circumstance at the end. And here we are, experiencing the influences of the age of Kali. Chapter 3 is called Bhumi Gita. And I'm going to read just a few verses from there. This is Mother Earth lamenting about the condition that exists in the age of Kali, just like we might lament about, you know, read any newspaper or watch the news or something. How unfortunate. How people can behave like this. I remember as a young man in college, getting really disturbed about man's inhumanity to man. How can people do that? This thing, that thing. Everyone wants to be treated nicely. Why do they treat other people so the opposite? It doesn't make any sense. It's crazy. So here's Bhumi contemplating the same. Seeing the kings of this earth busy trying to conquer her, the earth herself laughed. She said, "Just see how these kings were actually playthings in the hand of death by desiring to conquer me. Great rulers of men, even those who have learned, even those who are learned, need frustration and failure because of material lust, driven by lust. These kings place great hope and faith in the dead lump of flesh called body. Even though the material frame is as fleeting as bubbles of foam on water, kings and politicians imagine, just like we heard Kamsa, yes, from yesterday, remember? First, I will conquer my senses in my mind. Then I will subdue my chief ministers and rid myself of those thorn pricks of my advisors, citizens, friends, relatives, as well as the keepers of my elephants. In this way, I will gradually conquer the entire earth." A couple of people like that on the earth today, without mentioning the names, the newspapers filled with them. Because the hearts of these leaders are bound by great expectations, they fail to see death waiting nearby. After conquering all the land on my surface, these proud kings forcibly enter into the ocean to conquer the sea itself. What is the use of their sense of self-control, which is aimed at political exploitation? The actual goal of self-control is spiritual liberation. Just a social comment. Think of people that are just, you know, right here in America, right here in Seattle. Big, respected people. The president of, or CEO of Apple, Steve Jobs, and our own, what's his name, Microsoft, Bill Gates. Honored like anything. They started with nothing, and they have amassed enormous riches by their creativity and skill and whatever else it takes to do what they did. And now they're, you know, one's gone and the other's developing his charity programs. The Vedic model is just the opposite. You know, the great wealth of Sanatana Goswami and Rupa Goswami, they gave it all up so they could live as mendicants in Vrindavan, engage in Krishna Katha. That's our hero, our role models. Just, you know, just the opposite. Not from rags to riches, but from riches to a life of devotion to Krishna. Exclusive devotion to Krishna. They're our heroes. But the age of Kali is upside down. So Shukadeva Goswami continues, "O best of the Kurus, the earth continued as follows. Although in the past great men and their descendants have left me, departing from this world in the same helpless way they came into it, even today foolish men are trying to conquer me. For the sake of conquering me, materialistic people fight one another. Father opposes their sons, and brothers fight one another because their hearts are bound to possessing political power. Political leaders challenge one another. All this land is mine, it's not yours, you fool. Thus they attack one another and die." Just think about it. It's all over the place. All over the place. I don't even know what all these different groups are. You know, this fighting in this country, that country, and Iraq. You know, I don't even know what these different groups are. They're all the same religion. They're fighting with each other till, you know, till death. I don't know what their issues are. But whatever their issues are, it's so silly. Pragosh, our GBC from Ireland, described, he's, you know, from his education, he's been a bit of a historian. he was describing the details of, you know, the Irish and the Catholics fighting with one another for generations. Over what? I don't know. Something. Bloodshed. His brother killing brother because one became a Catholic and the other's a Protestant. You know, there's a Protestant who became a Catholic. Fighting and killing each other. So, nonsensical. Anyway, his booming heat, she's lamenting over the circumstance, laughing. It's just, you know, laugh or cry. It's so unfortunate. And so, hearing all of this, Maharaj Parikshit says to Shukadeva Goswami, what can be done? What to do? You know, that thing we ask ourselves sometimes. We're just like this little person off somewhere, and we see all this craziness, and what can we do? We're here doing what Shukadeva Goswami says in response. I'm going to read now just two verses, text 51 and 52 in this chapter. There's several things that happen in between, but considering time, I'm supposed to give a shorter class than this one. This famous verse, Kalir Doshin Hey Rajan, Yasi Ekamahan Ganan. What's the rest? Kirtanadeva Krishnasya, Mukta Sangha Param Vrajet. My dear King, although Kali Yuga is an ocean of faults, there is still one good quality about this age. Simply by chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, one can become free from the material bondage and be promoted to the transcendental kingdom. The influence of the age of Kali upon us, when you go back to Seattle or Portland or wherever you came from, and you go to work tomorrow, Monday, and you're in, you know, that same Kali Yuga atmosphere where, you know, people are running around doing their material, their Kali Yuga thing. So there's protection from the influences of that atmosphere upon you by, according to Srimad Bhagavatam, Nama Prabhu protects us from that contamination. And the next verse, which is the last verse of chapter 3, another very famous verse. Kriteya jayato vishnun tretayam yatuko makai dvapare paricharyanam charyayam kalo tad harikirtana. So the four different ages, the Yuga Dharma is identified, and in this age of Kali, chanting the holy name. Hari Kirtana, chanting of the holy name, Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. So, almost done. We're going to read from Jiva Goswami's commentary and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary on this last verse. Jiva Goswami writes, this is 500 years ago. He didn't get the good fortune of seeing the advancement of technology and how rapidly technology is accelerating degradation of the age of Kali, because it's something powerful in the hands of foolish people. Jiva Goswami writes, chanting the Lord's name is the best austerity for the people. It's the simplest of austerities. This should be particularly performed in Kali Yuga to please the Lord. This is what is motivating the devotees while they chant, to please Him. He cites from Vishnu Purana, the moment one does not think of Vasudeva, that moment immediately becomes destructive, full of faults, illusion, and mistakes. We're susceptible to the age of Kali, and when calling the holy name, we're protected from those pernicious effects of this age upon us. And then Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes, now it is said that Kali Yuga is the best of all yugas. So this is the question, why does Krishna permit this? Age of Kali, so much suffering. He's giving the opportunity for those who take shelter of him. The pinch, ouch, says, let me take shelter. Just like in New York, when 9/11 took place, people became really religious. Like really religious, completely religious. Because their bubble of security was popped. No one could touch us, we're in Manhattan. But they got to Manhattan, and they weren't safe. It faded after some time. But literally, every street corner, you know, normally street corners in New York, even if it says don't walk, they walk if there's a car coming. Or they have to run a little bit and then the car has to slow down. Just like, risk your life to cross the street. The mode of passion is so intense. But they stop. Instead, they put shrines on every corner, this side and that side. With, the Muslim one, and the Hindu one, and the Buddhist one, the Christian one, all in one place. They would stop and pray, and whatever they do, according to their practice. It went on for like 2 months, 2 to 3 months. And then the modes of danger took over again. So the dangers of the age of Kali, and the degradation of the age of Kali, for thoughtful people, they wish to not become degraded. They wish to have protection. And there's protection for us by the chanting of the holy name. It's the best of all ages. Because everything else is so yucky. Take shelter of Krishna. Though Kali is an ocean of falsehood, one good quality prevails like a king, as one king alone kills many thieves. This one good quality destroys all the faults of Kali. What is that one quality? It is, through chanting alone, which is independent of meditation or other processes, that one attains the highest human goal of prema. Chanting alone produces all results, what to speak of when it is combined with meditation and the other processes of bhakti while chanting. So, here we are in Fort Flagler Park, a former, military base, having a japa retreat. And we're not burying our heads in the sand. Some people think like that. All these Hare Krishna people banging their tambourines and cymbals when the world is crumbling. We should be social activists and do something. We're spiritual activists and we're doing something. We're protecting ourselves, one. By our holding this japa retreat, all of you, and kids included, by chanting, are not only getting your own protection, but when you go out here and there, you'll be, instruments to help extend that protection to others, just by the Krishna consciousness that you're carrying, and the message that you're carrying, and your enthusiasm for chanting, and you're sharing that enthusiasm for chanting, and that will infect, in a good way, and affect others. And that the chanting of the holy name is such that even if you don't have contact with anybody else, which you will, the very yajna itself of what we're doing, it's the answer, it's the Krishna conscious answer, it's the Bhagavatam answer, it's the Bhagavat Dharma answer to the age of Kali. Yes? It's one of the six questions at the very beginning of the first chapter. Now that Krishna has departed, where have religious principles taken shelter? And the answer is, in Srimad Bhagavatam they've taken shelter. And the Bhagavatam teaches us to chant the holy name. Religious principles are protected by the very thing that we're doing here. So we're not Pollyannas closing our eyes and saying everything is nice. We know it's not nice. or doing something proactively, spiritually, powerfully, authoritatively. So chant. chant with great enthusiasm, with the conviction that this will help me permanently enhance my relationship with Krishna. Permanently. Today, tomorrow, this summer, this year, till the next retreat that we have, and eternally, it'll go with the soul. The best thing I could possibly be doing. I have my other duties, and I'll go back and do those other duties, but while here, today, completely focused. Leave the other things somewhere else. Completely focused. You do like that, and you'll have a transformation experience. Something will move inside. Krishna will see that effort. Krishna will help you. For sure. For sure and certain. Okay. I talked much longer than I intended. I intended like a short class. So I'm not going to take questions, but I invite you all to have a fantastic 64 round day. Those of you that don't complete 64 rounds because whatever the reason, we're going to have another class sometime this afternoon according to the schedule. And where is that class going to be? Oh, organizers? Brajabhati, you said it last time, she here? Yeah, where, you know? Think? We went down by the dock. Is that where we're going to be this time? Okay. So if you don't know, find out, and well, that's where we'll go. If you want, if you plan to only chant 32 rounds or whatever, however many you complete by whatever the time is on the schedule, we'll go down by the dock, just down, and we'll have a little discussion down there. And otherwise, certainly it's a beautiful sunny day, very unique for Seattle, and you may want to get out and walk around, but I recommend that you, as far as possible, encourage you at least, stay together or stay in the space here, and it will, your experience will be very strong. You may need to do so many things. If you find you're getting restless and go for a walk, come back and be in the association of devotees chanting together. Those that have been through japa retreats know what I'm talking about. Those that haven't so much, you'll find out. Please respect Mona Rata, one other reminder on the same point. And we'll see you back again according to whatever the time says on our schedule. We'll have kirtan and some gathering together in the evening. Srila Prabhupada ki.